This is your moment. Your moment to move forward and make progress. It's time to see where an education can take you. For over 130 years, Strayer University has been at the forefront of change, offering programs that help students like you get ahead and stay ahead, so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.
Welcome to Nobody Told Me. I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens. Children today are fundamentally different from past generations. They truly have less self-control.
So says our guest on this episode, certified parent educator Catherine Reynolds Lewis, author of the book, The Good News About Bad Behavior, Why Kids Are Less Disciplined Than Ever, and What to Do About It. Catherine, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
How are children today fundamentally different from those in the past?
Well, I got into this question really first as a parent, wondering if it was just me who had trouble getting my kids to do what I want. But then as a journalist, I dug into the research on behavioral and mental health and found that over and over, we have so many different research studies showing that the prevalence of ADHD and anxiety and depression and even suicidality are so high. And one really fascinating study I found looked at the simple measure of how long children can stay still when you tell them to. And in fact, it's declined by about 75 or 80% in the last 50 years. So in a lot of different ways, our kids just aren't as able to manage their behavior, thoughts, and emotions as they had been maybe 10, 20, 30 years ago. And as a result, it means that we're often frustrated with them as parents or educators or adults working with kids and trying to just gain their cooperation.
I was absolutely shocked when I read that nearly half of today's children will develop a behavioral disorder, a mood disorder, or a substance abuse problem by the age of 18. Why is that?
It's a great question. I think that is the big question that we can't quite prove, because you can't put a randomly selected sample of kids in a time machine and send them back 30 years to be raised differently. But what we do know is that a lot of the things that have changed in the last 20, 30 years, the time period in which we've seen this spike in anxiety, depression, ADD, are very correlated to those issues in research studies. So for example, we see that kids are playing a lot less than they did 20, 30 years ago. They don't have the unstructured playtime. They don't have just downtime. And we know that play is the work of childhood, and that's how kids have always learned social and emotional skills, cooperation, getting along. They learn self-confidence. So play is a big factor that in my book I write about as contributing to this problem of self-regulation. The second factor that we hear a lot about in the media, and I don't want to make too much of it, but is social media, technology, the sort of always on nature of our modern life that even in adults is associated with anxiety, depression, narcissism. So it's even stronger with our kids, this sense of, you know, never really having a break from a screen, always being able to turn something on to entertain you. So you don't have downtime again. You don't get bored. You don't find ways to amuse yourself or manage your emotions. You can always turn to a device to do it for you. And then the third factor is just that our kids are unemployed. They don't have hustle jobs. They don't have after school jobs. They don't have a way to contribute to their family or their community. Instead, childhood is so much about achievement and performance, and that doesn't feed our kids' sense of self in a wholesome, fundamental way that contributing does.
I often see parents and caregivers on their cell phones when, in my view, they should be paying attention to what their kids are doing or simply interacting with them. How do you feel about that, about the fact that parents and caregivers are so much more connected to their technology?
Yes, absolutely. And I am one myself. I was actually just tonight at a school event where the educators were saying we really want the kids to be less on their phones, have more time away. And perhaps you parents could model it for them. Certainly guilty myself. And I think it's an important reminder that our children learn from us. And so when they see that our cell phone is the most important thing and we're always going to check it when it buzzes and we cannot be without it, we're sending them a signal that it's so crucial. So, yes, we may be part of the problem. We parents may be potentially causing some of this, but we also are such an important part of the solution that whenever we can maybe catch ourselves on a cell phone and say, oh, my gosh, I can't believe I just picked up my cell phone because I was bored. There's other ways that I can engage when I'm bored. And here, let's play a card game. Let's go for a bike ride. It's a way to model for your kids that, yes, it's a very easy crutch, but there's other things we can do. So I would never begrudge a new parent a little stolen Instagram time because we all do need that. But I think we need to be mindful of the messages we're sending our kids. And as you say, a missed opportunity to engage and interact and to help them to experience the world through their eyes again.
You touched on how the idea of play has changed dramatically in the past few years. And I'm wondering what we can do to restore the old-fashioned way of play that doesn't have to do with video games and cell phones.
Yes, it's actually, I really find a lot of optimism out there that when I go to communities and speak about these ideas and talk about the good news about bad behavior, that more and more people are telling me stories of how one kid moved into the neighborhood who was used to playing in the backyard, and all of a sudden, there was this whole crowd of 8 and 9-year-old boys who were building forts and, you know, playing in the trees as opposed to all of these scheduled activities that they had been doing previously. So it really just takes one person mm-hmm. to say, I'm going to do this differently. You know what? One Saturday afternoon, we're going to, you know, just have a open house and kids can come over and play in our backyard, or we'll let the kids play in the neighborhood. And more people see how easy it is to just change your lifestyle a little. And the other thing I think we really need to do is take some of the fear out of parenting, because I know for me, I scheduled my kids in a lot of activities because I didn't want them to miss out. And mm-hmm. and so many of our well-meaning parenting decisions are founded on fear, the fear of my kid not competing, you know, not being ready, when actually we can say to ourselves, the most important thing is at 3:30 on any random afternoon, I can kick my kid out the door and say, go play, and they can amuse themselves. They can find something to do. They can knock on a neighbor's door and strike up a conversation mm-hmm. and build. And it's amazed me what my kids will do in the backyard when they have that free time. They just do the most creative building projects. They build forts. They come up with little games that they invent the rules to. And it's really just a matter of giving them the space and the freedom from other distractions like video games. They may not thank you at first, okay?
But, right.
but they do find ways to amuse themselves. And I think they can even feel it in their bodies at the end of a day that they're feeling better having had activity, having had face-to-face social engagement, and having had that real playtime.
Your book is called The Good News About Bad Behavior. So what is the good news about bad behavior? What do you want parents to know?
It's such a good question. So the good news when your kid is acting up is that it's normal. It's everybody who's experiencing this. And it's a signal to you that, hey, here's a skill my child is missing, or here's an opportunity for me to figure out what is missing in my child's makeup, that they can't manage their behavior, thoughts, or emotions in this moment. And so I'm going to be a detective with my child and help them to figure out, you know, what strategies might help them manage better in that moment. So often we think we have to be in charge of our kid. They have to be perfect. Anytime they act up, it's a reflection on us and our failure. But in fact, it's not that at all. This is just normal childhood, and we should see it as a learning opportunity, as a moment when our child is trying to communicate to us that they just don't have all the tools yet that they need to deal with that situation. And the sooner we start addressing it, the sooner we start building our kids' frustration tolerance or anger management skills or their social skills, their communication skills, they're going to be so much better equipped for life because we're having those conversations now and helping them to get practice at using those really important skills.
You suggest presenting today's children with consequences rather than punishments. And I'm wondering what the difference is between those two.
This is another really important distinction. So consequences are the things that happen because of the choices that you made. And everyone experiences consequences. Punishments are imposed on you from a more powerful person, and you maybe didn't know that that was what was going to happen. Consequences are how we learn. Punishment, honestly, just feeds resentment, and it teaches that child, I want to be the one who's powerful. I want to be the one in control. And it sows the seeds for a child who is power hungry and who will always be fighting for control with you. Instead, if we're helping to set up consequences, then we're really standing side by side with our child and helping them learn, this is the way the world works. If you don't take a shower at night after a day of playing soccer, you're going to be stinky and people may not want to cuddle in bed with you or, you know, whatever the consequence is that you've discussed with your child ahead of time. And I have a 4 R's rule for consequences that keep them from being punishments. If they are revealed in advance, if they're respectful of the child, but also the adult, if they are related to the child's choices so that they're truly teaching, and if they're reasonable in scope. So if your kid sneaks their cell phone out from where it's charging and they use it when they're not supposed to, they don't lose their cell phone for a year, right? They might lose it for a day or two, but it's not going to be some huge hammer coming down. Because again, our children are just learning and they need that chance to mess up. We should expect it. We should actually, as I say, be joyful that, okay, great, this is their chance to learn about the consequences of their choices.
What does the research show about what happens with kids who experience corporal punishment like spanking?
It's really severe. So there's a very clear link between corporal punishment and a whole range of negative outcomes. And The Deepest Well is a wonderful book that really goes into the medical consequences. So it can even be tied to obesity, higher rates of coronary disease, higher rates of addiction and alcoholism, you know, just from having corporal punishment as a child. So it really is pretty severe. And then, of course, you can see a connection to anxiety, depression, certainly to a less loving relationship with the parent. So, corporal punishment, even spanking that we think is for their own good, is not actually going to help our children, because they're getting violence and pain from the person who is actually supposed to be teaching them, who's supposed to be their source of comfort and stability in the world. And the research is really interesting, even around yelling and criticizing kids, that there is a connection to mental health. So this was hard for me because I have a tendency to be a little critical. And when I read the research on how tied that can be to relapse into mental illness, to eating disorders, I really tried to curb that tendency because it can have such long-term consequences for our children's mental and behavioral health, but especially for our relationship with them.
But you also say that we need to be careful with rewarding our children. So why is that?
Yes. Yeah, so it's kind of a catch-22, right? I'm taking all the tools that we like to use away. But the problem with rewards is that there's also some really interesting sociological research that when we are rewarded for doing an action, we tend to not want to do it as much. Huh. So when kids are rewarded for grades, they tend to take fewer intellectual or academic risks because they don't want to jeopardize that reward that they want. Right? When people are given a reward for trying a new food, they actually rate that food as less enjoyable. So it's counterintuitive, but whenever we reward a behavior, we're actually undermining our children's intrinsic motivation and intrinsic interest in that activity.
What's your message to parents about giving their kids constructive criticism?
Well, I always ask my own children, would you like some input on that? Or would you be open to some feedback? And it makes a world of difference. You'd be surprised how often they actually say yes. And that opens the door for us to give them advice. But if they say no, we have to respect that. Sometimes they're just going to learn about the world themselves. They're not ready for that constructive criticism or feedback, and eventually they will be. But if we really focus on, you know, modeling, looking for those opportunities to jump in with our advice if they let us, they're going to learn from the world pretty effectively just from their choices and the impact of their choices.
And I do think it's really important to give them that choice, because I was really alarmed when I read that even if a parent doesn't mean to be critical in a situation, a depressive child's brain may hear it that way. How can we kind of curb our criticism then?
Yeah, it's really hard. And I am on this road to recovery myself. Toni Morrison had a wonderful quote about when you walk into a room and your child looks up at you, you want them to see your face lighting up with joy and love, right? Mm-hmm. And so I try to really make that my first interaction. Even if I walk into the room and they have, you know, chocolate smudge all over their face, my impulse is to grab a wet napkin and wipe it, right? But first, you want to show them the love, show them the connection, and then offer, you know, hey, would you like a napkin for your chocolate mouth? You know, that's what we call connect before you correct. So just make sure you have that connection first, that you have a positive interaction. And then if you see the opportunity for some constructive feedback, you can get it in afterwards. So that may be a first step for someone whose first impulse is that criticism.
Yeah, connection, you say, is one of the three important things for parents to keep in mind in terms of discipline. Tell us more about the other two, communication and capability.
Yes. So this is the three C's that came out of my research over 5 years of looking at the most successful discipline models in the country. And they all shared these three elements, that a real focus on relationship building and communication that teaches. So communication that's actually aimed at teaching children those social and emotional skills. And there's really powerful research now coming out of neuroscience labs about the way that we are always communicating with our kids by modeling, by our tone of voice, by how we approach situations, and that they're learning from us about emotions, about the world. And it's really important that we have that two-way street, that we're listening and helping them to understand their own reactions just as much as we're telling. So it's a two-way communication. There's some really specific examples that are amazing that I wrote about, you know, from following these researchers. And then the third is capability building. So this is the payoff of the hard work that we're going to do, you know, focusing on connecting with our kids and communicating with them in constructive, non-critical ways. We get to see them grow. We get to see them as a learner and someone who's capable of change. And that is both with these social emotional skills that we've been talking about, but also in the really basic life skills around the house. So this is where, you know, instead of saying you're going to do chores because everyone should do chores, you say, hey, would you like to learn how to make a pizza for dinner tonight? And you're doing an activity with your child and you're teaching them an important skill. And at the same time, you are connecting with them. So we can always engage our kids in contributing and being more capable if we make it something together. And if it's more of a teaching opportunity than sort of, you know, wagging the finger and having this sort of notion of household jobs as, you know, dreary and punishment.
How do your ideas for parenting older children and teenagers differ from your ideas for parenting younger children?
The basic philosophy is truly the same. Our teens need that connection, communication, and capability building just as much, even though they may not admit it. But I like to think of childhood as this sort of path from our babies are 100% dependent on us, and we are 100% in charge, to our kids at 18 heading out of the house being ready to take on the world, and we are 0% in charge. And we always want to be pushing more and more responsibility onto their plate and more independence. And when those two are tied together, our kids will joyfully accept the responsibility because they see it as something that goes hand in hand with privileges and with independence. So that's the piece where I with teenagers or preteens, you know, you want to always see their acts of rebellion or their defiance or their mouthy behavior as a signal, again, this great signal to us that they're ready for more. They need more independence, and so therefore they're ready for more responsibilities, and see it as an opportunity to widen their circle of power and shrink your circle of control.
How do you feel about parents who use timeouts when a child misbehaves and parents who reward good behavior?
So I know these are very popular techniques, and I myself used them when my kids were little because there's a million books about how to do them. Mm-hmm. But again, they are just both really counterproductive to what our real goal should be. So our goal as parents is not to be in charge or to have perfect children. Our goal is to teach our kids self-regulation, to teach them to manage their thoughts, behavior, and emotions. And sitting in a timeout chair or on a naughty step is not teaching anyone anything but maybe resentment of their parent and shame that they were a bad kid. Instead of punishment, we need to, again, work towards consequences, have family agreements that are real learning opportunities. And instead of rewards, let our children experience the joy that comes intrinsically with all of the things that they're learning to do. When you can make a dinner for your family and see the joy on your family's face, that is a better reward than $5 for doing a household job or whatever else, a sticker on a sticker chart. So we really need to have faith in our kids that they want to be independent. They want to be capable. They want to contribute. And if we let them have that opportunity, that in and of itself is reward enough.
When do you think that parents should bring in professional help if their child is just misbehaving and it seems to be completely different than what the rest of their peers are doing?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, the problem with yes, you always want to start with the pediatrician, mm-hmm. right? Pediatricians are a great source of referrals and a great source of resources in your community. So I always think it's worth a call, you know, even if it ends up being small, you know, just to check in with your kid's yeah. pediatrician. But the truth is that we know our kids best. And too many times I've seen parents, you know, say, oh, my kid needs therapy or they have this diagnosis and let's take them to this professional to fix them. And that's not how it works, right? Someone who sits in an office with your child for an hour a week is not going to have the insight into that kid, and they're not going to be able to have the influence that you will by learning about whatever issue your child is having and developing skill in some of the techniques and really being engaged in doing it yourself. So I, at this point, I sort of feel like being a parent in this era in our modern age, you almost have to be a little bit of a therapist, a little bit of a, you know, of a coach, a little bit of a home ec teacher, you know.
Yeah, and wear many hats.
Exactly. And so try to be, again, like that detective who says, you know what, it seems like my kid's having some impulse control. They're having some anger management. Yes, we're going to go consult the experts, but I'm also going to read the books. I'm going to try out techniques. I'm going to consider myself to be the expert, not on this diagnosis or this behavior, but on my own child. And you're going to be able to see pretty quickly if new strategies are working or if it's really not the right fit for your child.
That sounds like really good advice. And along those lines, Laura and I are a mother-daughter duo. And when she was younger, much younger, and her sister was much younger, I would talk to other parents. You know how other moms get together and talk and compare notes on how their kids are doing. I'm wondering how much of a grain of salt you attribute the advice or input from other parents.
Yeah, I mean, I too really value input and ideas from other parents. But again, you just need to know your own child. And I think it's important as you grow as a parent to learn which friendships and relationships are going to feed your confidence as a parent, who are going to help you to stay on whatever path you've set, and which kind of sow seeds of doubt, you know, where they say, oh, your kid's doing that. Well, mine was perfect after 2 days of being grounded or having their cell phone taken away, because we don't really have the full insight into someone else's life or what's happening in their household. And different kids with different temperaments respond very differently to different strategies. So a lot of times parents will say, oh, well, this works for me, And I would always ask them, first of all, what does works mean? Does it mean that that child learned to manage their behavior, or just that they learned to hide it from you?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And
mm-hmm.
second of all, your child may be different than my child.
Mm-hmm. Right, right, right. I always had to take it with a grain of salt. And sometimes it would be so frustrating mm-hmm. to listen to.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And that's why I always say, you know, parents need to surround themselves with people who are helping you learn, helping you grow, and not feeding that anxiety about I'm doing the wrong thing, or, you know, my kid isn't as great as these other kids, because there's so much of that already in our culture. We don't need it from our friendships.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you say that it's okay for parents to just walk away in the middle of an argument with their child? I think this is actually great advice, and the more I read about it, I thought it was really interesting, but it just seems to kind of go against a lot of the things that I would have thought to do as a parent. Not that I'm a parent yet, but from what I've learned.
Yeah, well, you know, it's an interesting question, and I don't know that it's a one-size-fits-all solution, but often when we're deeply engage in a power struggle with our child, they're heated, we're heated, and there's fascinating research that our biorhythms synchronize with our kids. So if they're yelling and their heart rate's high and they're breathing fast, ours probably is too. Mm-hmm. And that's just going to become a vicious cycle where we're both dysregulated. Nobody's thinking rationally. Neither of us is going to be able to access the problem-solving parts of our brain. And in that moment, it may be a better choice to say to your child, I love you, but I'm too upset to think straight right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take a break and we're going to discuss this later. Because when you've both calmed down and reconnected and had a moment to get back into the prefrontal cortex where we make our best decisions, right, then you may be able to come up with a solution that works, as opposed to just being in that fight or flight state, the really excited, high energy, not thinking rationally state.
Tell us more about why self-regulation is such an important skill for your kids to develop.
Well, what's fascinating to me also is looking at the research on executive function and self-control and how that is more correlated to success in school and life than IQ. So if we can teach our kids to be organized, to help to manage their behavior, their thoughts, their emotions, to execute plans, to, you know, manage big projects, they're going to be more successful in school. They're going to be more successful in the workplace, and they're going to be happier because mm-hmm. they're not going to feel out of control, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, it breaks my heart to see so many parents with the best intentions putting their kids in after-school academic programs or drilling with flashcards. And sure, that's great in its place, but even better would be talking to our kids about their feelings or helping them do a body scan when they get angry and say, you know, where in your body do you feel it when you really get heated? And how do you calm yourself back down? Those are such important skills, especially in the world we're moving into, where collaboration and creativity and innovation and thinking outside the box are going to be so much more important than do you know your timetables? Because you know what? There's a calculator that can do that.
Isn't that true?
Really? So true.
And Catherine, as you know, our show is called Nobody Told Me. And so we always ask our guests, what is your nobody told me lesson? So what is it that you wish someone had told you about parenting that you wish that they had that would have saved you some tough times?
Well, I guess I wish that I had known how much I would have to change to be the parent who was really the best parent for my own children. Although I don't know if someone had said that when I had a baby, if I would have believed them, but so many of those early struggles were me trying to impose my ideas about what parenting should look like, what a kid should be doing. All those shoulds were just painful, and we had a lot of conflict. And once I realized that I had to evolve and to grow into the parent that my kids needed, I sort of relaxed into the role, and I was able to just enjoy it.
And Catherine, how can people connect with you on social media and the internet?
I'm at my website is CatherineRLewis.com, and you can find my Twitter, Facebook, Instagram there, and my email address. I always love to hear from parents, either with questions about kids' behavior or feedback if you read the book and have questions. So that's a good one-stop shop, my website.
Well, Catherine, you are just a wealth of information, and we've really enjoyed this conversation with you.
Oh, me too. Thank you so much for the opportunity to share, and thank you for the wonderful, insightful questions. I don't know if my mom would ever do a podcast with me, but I love that
we do have fun doing it.
We do.
I think it helps us negotiate some of our differences in our relationship, actually. So it's kind of like therapy for us.
It is. We always learn a lot from our guests.
Oh, that's wonderful. It's a great, great way to connect with each other.
Well, our thanks to Kathryn Reynolds-Lewis, author of the book, The Good News About Bad Behavior, Why Kids Are Less Disciplined Than Ever and What to Do About It.
I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens.
You're listening to Nobody Told Me. Thank you so much for joining us.